I could cast it, but why aren't you leaked, Salab?
Shall I be here? I really had to admit that I didn't have done it before. Smutsrio has to excuse me if I make many mistakes, but I could tell you the story that is quite still quite vivid in my mind. As you know, we just passed 70th anniversary of the sinking of the Titanic. But let me please say one few sentences to you, and that is keep a tribute to my father, because I wouldn't be here if it hadn't been for his bravery. We had taken a very beautiful trip up the Hudson River. Cairo.
Nias. And we begged at the Holy Land, which was a very great interest to my father.
He came back for the way, the summon France, and right up to the company of France, and phoned the ship at Cherbourg. The ship sailed from Southampton, and as you know, it was supposed to be an unsinkable boat, and everybody believed it. There were very distinguished people on that ship, such as John Jacob Astor, Mrs. Guggenheim of New York, and Mr. and Mrs. Krause of New York. I remember the first day of seeing John Jacob Astor scoring the bar, but at the other side, I don't remember much. And of course, there'd be a lot that I cannot remember, but I'll remember things that are most vivid. I'll tell you about the things most vivid in my mind. We started out here a few days on the sea, and that, well, after 2 days, the fog settled in. And people were very much concerned about it. They realized that we were surrounded icebergs. But the captain, Spin, an English girl, wanted to make the right. And hit in there in very short period of time, which no other boat had ever succeeded in doing. So we sat, and as I say, after a beautiful, sumptuous dinner, after looking about in the beautiful rooms, one up the other, very beautifully furnished, distinguished people, beautifully dressed, we sat there and said, I remember the last thing my father said to me, in fact, do you think you were lost until morning after such a tremendous meal, as you might say? Well, he was a very brave man, and he was always doing the duty. And anything that was to be done quickly was done by my father, Mr. Noor. My sister and I, who I was with beside my father, went to our cabins, and really, about 1 o'clock, we felt this terrific jar, this terrific noise. What could it be? Here they are in this immortal ship, never imagining you were in such terrible danger. Almost immediately, my father tapped at that door. He said, get up quickly. Don't take anything with you, but put on more clothing. So we obeyed him, as we were told to do in those days, obey your father and so, and went upstairs or up the upper deck,
which was then, well, you might say almost empty, because both people were still at sleep, resting in their cabins. Already there was one bolt that had been lowered. And already, by the time we got up there, this tremendous, great, big, unsinkable Titanic was misting on my side. So the second boat was about to be filled, and I was to be in the second boat with my sister.
It was filled rather readily. All women, of course. People perhaps about middle age and a bit older.
The last thing I remember my father saying to me, it seemed more dangerous due to get into that boat.
I came to see and to stay below Titanic. We got in and lowered the boat into the boat, which was, as you know, the deck boats are very high up on the ship. They're very high up at the very top. And it was frightful scenes. Look way down up the below it there. Most people in that boat were women, as I say, a middle-aged and old. They were so stunned that they couldn't talk, they couldn't say anything, they couldn't move. So it was up to me, the only younger person there at that time, and I have to say I was pretty free at that time, to take hold of the oars, and he helped me, just one man, row that oar, which I did. I never rowed a boat
before in my life, which is quite a challenge, as you might say, for me to do. But we were lowered, and immediately we were told the one thing to do is to get away the ship as fast as they can. So this we rowed, and we were quite a distance off, and of course in the meantime, lights were growing dim because we were far away from Titanic. And last we were said, well, this is perhaps the safest place to be. We thought Tarnak not. So with the case of danger, we couldn't believe that the ship was really sink. It wouldn't be sucked out in any way. So we were all sort of stopping and coming through a little bit, as you might say. And occasionally we would see the lights of another ship. Because at that time, by the time we had gotten out to some distance, I'll perhaps say 1 mile, 2 miles, I never could tell just how far away we were. There'd be an occasional ship come along. He would say, all of their captain's ship, and maybe they'll come to our rescue and help us. They didn't dare to get near the Titanic. There were a few people, some of them struggling in the water. There were a few boats, as said as we were, being rowed here and there. Nobody talking. Cold and very cold. And there we stayed, I will say, until almost till dawn came. Occasionally, rockets would blow out of the Titanic, try to make people see them as they try to make the other ship see them because they were posse. But no, nobody dared to come near us. And then the terrible moon came. His ship sank. I'll never forget, even it was somewhere living in my ears and my sister's ears, the noise, the terrible noise that you when it barely went down in all of them. And he else, Rebobo and the distress, couldn't do a thing. Dawn came, and when it did, we realized how almost surrounded we were with ice. But that captain had to make the record. In Zorhi, may keep them all their lives. And I learned only last winter that it wasn't only the captain's fault. The owner of the five-star line is on that book. And he said, go ahead, get into New York as fast as you can. So he made the rapid. And that I don't know for sure. I know that Captain Smith was on the phone. So dawn came, and everything was very quiet. The ship had gone. It was a lovely morning. But where were we? Where should we go? But that Carpater in the middle of the night came on, and that was the boat that saved. It stood by. So we rowed to the Carpater. And my sister by thinking of course he'd see our farm, because we did realize the terrible disaster the people that lost their lives. And I remember it was almost like a funeral as it came off the side of the ship with steps to come and not see your father. And you're almost no man at all. And if the Walter man, he's a disgrace. He came up, and of course you didn't see your father. The ship was loaded because it was on the way to London, heavily filled with tourists. People had to sleep on the floor for everything. Well, it didn't make any difference for any of us after that terrible disaster. We were speechless, nobody thought. I can't remember very much. I don't think we were there more than 2 days.
And I really remember about the meals. I don't remember. It's really talking with people. I can't remember anything about that.
But in some way, a very close friend of my father's, in the Discomion, came from by. Former town or Lexington, and he realized that Weaver had been, that the ship had been going down, and most of all these lists of people, as I showed, as you will see in that picture, the people that were lost or not lost, the people that were on the Titanic, so forth. And he knew that we were there, so he got a little roll out from McMe Dock, and in some way, I was able to get in there. I don't remember that part of it very well, how I cut the Carpathia in at the spare boat. Yvonne said it to sit on the, maybe it was a steamship. I don't know very well, but because he was born in New York. and my mother and another sister were waiting for us. For 3 days, the agony was something terrible for her, for mother, because every day in the newspapers there would come, this person has been saved and that person has been saved, this person hasn't been saved. It always contradicted the list the day before. So she would see that my father had been saved, then the next day was not saved. So as she was staying, the vice of a sister, at the old Manhattan in New York, that's where the station is now, a 42nd Street station. And she was poked against hope, as you might say, to greet her father and her husband and her two dogs. I remember her particularly as we came into the hall where she was staying in the hotel. Her arms were outstretched, ready to just embrace her spirits. And I also remember the agonizing tone of despair when she saw only my sister Nelson in tears of loss. The next day we hurried away from New York, got into Lexington Road about Sunday, and there was the communication person, Harold Collette, the work is author. And we never spoke in our family of that Titanic from that time until very recently. And we never mentioned the word Titanic.
She had advised, mother had to do a lot of business after we got home, but it was never talked about.
We were in mourning for 3 months, and my mother, who was at that 56 years old and lived to be 103, never removed her very deep mourning all that period of time. He said she died when she was 80 years old. Well, we had a beautiful service for my father,
and he was buried in the Mount Olden Cemetery in Cambridge.
But after that, about 3 weeks after that, someone was notified by mother
that his body had been washed up in the shores of Dushan. So she immediately sent someone who identified him, someone who knew him, in Nixie, and brought the body back again. It is the most miraculous thing I had imagined. I had never heard anybody be brought up, even not alive, but I mean, on the shore. From the Pantanas. I don't know anybody else. Who calls it? I never heard of it. We identified it by his little diary that he kept in Egypt. David died. And also by his, he had a ring. In those days, you know, men wore a diamond ring. He had that ring on. And he had his watch. He kind of a watch that just stacked, top back. Miller says that he had under a kilt every single night the reserve. And the ring is now on one of my grandmas. So he was buried. He's buried near the Cambridge, but he's more of a cemetery. Well, that was the end of my story. It's all I know about Titanic. But let me just finish with just a few words. In the 1960s, I did a little bit of traveling, and I went to Europe almost every year. For about 10 years. I was usually starting in by myself, and I'd always go to England and enjoying Egypt very much. One time I went there, you see the beautiful cathedral, Lichfield. It is noted for its beautiful carving. You went in a bus, and I went to the courier, and I said, I know that I'm going to go through the town by Captain Smith, Lick, and may I see the statue? The tears in his eyes, he said, I have been waiting to talk to some of the Jews' names who was on that ship with the Egyptian. So I was caught to the town hall and signed my name in court and book, so forth. And then I went to the cathedral to see it. I have always been very fond of music, and perhaps my most interesting poem, that's the inspiring instrument, is the organ. And so I entered this great, tremendous cathedral, perhaps some of the which is most impressive. And just as I entered it, I heard the organ. It seemed to just burst forth with a magnificent play back in church. It seemed almost being played for me. And I walked down the aisle of this tremendous cathedral alone.
and I came over me. What meaning has this meaning is this for me?
It was to my mind almost like, as you might imagine, like an ascension. Would you believe in ascension and all white's all faith? And I said, here am I all alone, experiencing the most inspiring music I could possibly in the town where the Smith did what's at a time. And I think more now of perhaps than I've ever thought of my father. So I walked down the aisles, almost with tears in my eyes alone. I said, this is the end tragedy in my life. To close this great, terrible experience and yet pose it in a magnificent way. So in closing a little talk to you, I have saved one little sentence, which seems to have a great deal of meaning for me, and I think for Peter. The efforts of man, of an alcohol, of the call nature, is nice and the blessed. I think you pretty for that. When you think of these buildings that are made there, they're absolutely proof against hurricanes or wooden fire. But store with such a calamity else. So the efforts of man are poems compared to the poets of nature. Thank you.
And if these are all privileges
to hear this, that lady, we'll never hear anything like it again, I don't think. Thank you very much, Booker. I stay with us, CJ, because I'm going to take him home with you. I'm going to take him home with you.
Yes, I'd be just like you pass that around.
Well, you want this passed around?
Want to come on Herbert Cutchins of Black and Goodbye Cal?
I have one question.
Was you here? That is a Dorothy is the same as Suju. That's you. Yeah, and Dorothy has looked like.
Mrs. Robb, is your sister older or younger than you?
Yeah, she was old. I was young. My sister was old.
Do you?
So you were never allowed, or did I tell you? We didn't. I don't seem we were allowed. We never stole the tape. Would have 66 many years, so she had to conduct the rites.
First, outside the matters, only recently that I myself taught to people about it, because all of them but them, my own immediate family, him died. And this is another world. And if anybody wants to hear about this very sad story, I'm looking to talk about. Up to this time, we didn't speak.
Would you want to describe the sound of the ship going down?
Do you see? See, despite the sound of the ship, then I can't describe it. I know my sister said it is in her ear all for life. The terrible noise. I suppose it was a combination, I might say, screaming people and water. So he is just terrible. Girl, sir.
Had the Titanic hit an iceberg? Is that why it went down?
Yeah, that's a force
that pushed it down here.